This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. In our International Insights conversation today, we talk about how organizations grow and acquire scale that allows them to do more. We talk to Melo Healy, the CEO of Healy Ventures, the company that started by representing McDonald's and Apple in Malta many years back, but today grew to employ over 10,000 people in Malta and many cities in Eastern Europe. I ask Mr. Healy about the growth of the company and how challenges related to operations and people change as an organization expands to territories that present both opportunities and risks. If I can take you back again, you mentioned 1995. Back then you were essentially the Malta representatives for McDonald's. How did the relationship with McDonald's kind of deepen at one point in time towards international expansion? We're interested in, you know, how did it happen, you know, back then?
So I joined the McDonald's part of the business in 2005, but the franchise had been in the family with my brother Paul 10 years before that in 1995. So when I took over in 2005, we you know, we looked at the market. Malta had just joined the European Union, so you know there were certain advantages in dealing in countries that like us had joined Europe. So you know, we're scouting with McDonald's to say that, look, you know, we're in Malta, we have 8 stores, we can grow a little bit, but we can't grow very much because of the size of the country. The family had quite a bit of international experience anyway in
other businesses,
be it shipping or real estate. And so the Baltics came along and we were offered to take over the license for the Baltic states, 3 of them. There were 19 restaurants.
Okay.
So there were 7 in Estonia, 6 and 6 in each.
Restaurants still to be opened?
No, restaurants that
they were operational there already.
So we did 2 things. We were awarded the license, but also we took over these 19 restaurants that belonged and were run by the corporation. This was December 2007. And just before Christmas, and on the 2nd of January, a colleague of mine and myself landed there in Latvia. We started off in Riga, which, although the business had three separate operations, Riga was the middle one, the central one. And we, you know, we started off by seeing what can be done to improve the business, to grow the business. Obviously, in terms of population, you were looking at 6 million people versus the 400,000 we had here. And, you know, we started recruiting people, building a business.
Okay. But kind of started from what you're saying on a kind of day-by-day basis. It wasn't a major decision. Listen, this is our, you know, start of an international process.
No.
It was like...
This was just developing the McDonald's brand for us, you know, associated to Healy Ventures, which wasn't Healy Ventures then,
exactly,
in 2005, to expand in our business. And we said to ourselves, okay, you know, if we can maybe double the number of stores here, you know, eventually we could work at having 50 stores.
Okay, but that I guess you realized when you were operating, not before, no?
Well, before we had an idea that, you know, 6 million people, there is a ratio that you can work out that in certain countries, you know, the ratio in France would be different to what it is probably in the Baltic states, but there's still a ratio that tells you that you can probably grow to 40 stores in the Baltics, which is more or less what we
So a degree of planning there was, like.
Yes, yes.
But was it a, not a surprise, was it, you know, a big, you know, leap for the company back then, or?
Well, it was obviously overwhelming that
it was overwhelming.
You land there. It was as cold as hell in this
okay. place,
which for us was already...
Even that is required acclimatization.
Yes. So, but anyway, we got on, you know, as long as you work well with teams of people, which is what we're probably the best at doing,
okay.
is working
okay.
with people.
Okay.
That's our forte, my forte and the people around me, I yeah. would say.
Because I guess every time you go to one of these countries, you meet a management that is already in place, and there's a lot of alignment with them, which you need to do.
Yes, right? I mean, some are in place, some aren't. Okay. You know, when we took over the Baltic States, there was an element of management okay. in place, but there wasn't senior management in place okay. because the okay. senior management didn't come with it.
Okay.
So we had to, you know, put in our
exactly.
own people. So we took in some people from Malta, we recruited others from the McDonald's system,
okay.
and that's how we grew it.
And it started a bit like a startup, if you like. So you went there and, you know, started
yes.
on the ground. But then, obviously, things happened from there. So give me a bit of an idea of the major kind of milestones after, you know, these Baltic
okay,
states.
In terms of McDonald's, what happened after was that we had looked at a couple of other smaller markets. And not what everything that you look at, you know, actually works and
okay.
and,
okay.
and you end up doing. But we, you know, we landed the Greek market in
okay.
next, and that was 2011. And it wasn't easy then.
Okay. Wasn't easy operationally, or wasn't also easy, kind of, I guess, in the strategic decision to actually go for it, no?
No, I think it wasn't easy on two counts. One was that the Greek market had a lot of competition.
Okay, okay. okay.
McDonald's wasn't very popular in Greece, as it is today. And also the crisis, the economic crisis, was
okay.
down the corner.
Oh, right, okay, okay. This is 2008, I guess.
No, this is 2011.
Oh, right, okay, more recent, okay, okay.
More recent this was. So when we got in there, we obviously had to revisit the structure. There was a structure that was built, geared up for a big number of stores,
okay.
which we didn't have. We had seasonal stores
okay.
on the islands, which we didn't have
okay.
any track record in running. So we had to accustomize ourselves to doing that sort of work. There were also other franchisees in the market, something that we...
You had never kind of experienced
hadn't,
before.
Hadn't experienced okay. before. So, you know, we had to set about... and we put in a couple of our... That's probably the market that we really went to town and put in four or five good people
okay.
from our group.
To actually... You
to
know,
actually go there and stay
on the
there.
Ground.
To fix.
And what would typically happen on the ground? So if you're in Greece, I imagine, I guess, well, Greece is at least warmer than Riga in this sense, but what would happen on the ground in the process, in the run-up of opening, you know, a number of restaurants in this sense?
Okay, so it depends really at what stage in development you are.
Right.
So if there's very little, then the decisions are, I would say, easy, but you know that you've got to open five stores in a certain locality,
okay.
for example. So wherever within this area they are, they say, okay, this could work. As long as your rental number is right, you work out your projections, you have to create a pipeline of sites.
Okay, okay.
So I think that is key. You know, you have to find the people to man the stores, you have to train them. And you know, the big opening date comes along and
exactly.
you...
One thing I wanted to discuss with you is the kind of the way the company is set up. Today, you're essentially a multinational based in Malta, so there's all the setup you can imagine in place. Back then, when you started opening McDonald's in the Baltics and in Romania, Greece, etc., how did you start, you know, putting in place, you know, basics, the basic procedures, processes, people, I guess, as you went along?
Well, I suppose coming from a culture of working within the McDonald's system gets you
okay.
there anyway.
Automatically.
Automatically,
yeah.
you have that culture that you're working within a system where you have processes, and where really, you know, it really helps you not reinvent the wheel. The minute
okay.
you start looking at, you know, wanting to do things your way,
okay.
we have this phrase that we like to use. We like to say we steal shamelessly.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, whatever there is that we can copy.
That has worked.
You know, from other businesses, even from our divisions, from one to the other, let's do it, because it makes you go quicker.
I think it's really interesting, because it has to do with, you know, with learning as you go along. And how do you ensure today that, you know, the different subsidiaries are stealing, to use your phrase, you know, from one ideas from one to the other? They meet, they have seminars.
Yes. I was about to say by preaching, but no, I think, you know, the teams work together. They, you know, we get everybody together as often as we can, because ultimately it's the values that put us all together, because the businesses are very different. You know, some might operate in the same country.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that the business is similar.
The same. Exactly.
And what works today for one business doesn't mean it works for the other.
Yeah.
But the more we can share, the better it is for everyone. I think the most important things to share are the things that we get wrong.
Okay.
Because everyone is very keen to share good stuff.
Exactly.
It's when we share the bad stuff
And how do you convince people to share the wrong things?
Because I think they appreciate that if somebody else has a bad story and they share it with them, it helps them.
Okay. So there's value for everyone in sharing and being open.
So today it's me being open about something, and tomorrow it's somebody else being open about something else.
Exactly. You know? But that's because you created a culture inside the company that allows this to happen.
I think that's important. I think the most important thing we have in the organization is the people.
Okay.
The people we have around us. I mean, I feel I'm blessed with with an exaggerated amount of good valuable people.
Okay. And what do you keep in mind when you're recruiting new people? You know, at various levels, I guess, including today, a lot of high management stuff, no?
Yes, I think what's important is that, you know, the people will have a commitment.
Okay.
And they have passion for what they're doing. But I think most important is that the people need to be good people.
Okay. Good at what they do, essentially.
Not only at what they do, good people, good individuals.
Okay.
You know, as with, you know, with everything else.
Authentic, I guess.
Yes, it's not how good you are at finance, it's what makes a person a good person.
Exactly.
And that's what we ultimately look for. Because all the other skills you either know or you can teach.
Exactly.
But you can't.
Whereas these are attitudes and actual values of the person.
You know, don't grow on trees, really.
Exactly. Today, with, you know, a number of subsidiaries, the company publicly listed and all that, it obviously has, you know, a lot of structure. If you had to kind of start again, what will be the elements that you would do differently in terms of processes, structures, you know, how you organize the company?
I think, you know, if we had to organize it today, we'd organize it differently. But we didn't do that today. We did it whenever it was. So I feel what we did was, you know, was pretty okay, pretty good. Could we have done better? Could we have been a bit faster?
Faster, okay.
I think we could have been slightly faster. There's always a balance you need to find between not organization, but as you grow larger, you know, there's this expectation that there's more policing, more governance.
Okay.
I think governance is very important. But on the other hand, I expect the teams to not to be policed, to govern, to manage their business properly. That should be in their DNA.
Yes.
You know, you can't create a committee for every single thing you want to do.
Exactly.
You know, just because you want to make sure that things are done well. Yes, there are checks and balances, but at the end of the day, if you have the good people around you, then that's what makes the difference.
Absolutely. How do you, you know, strike a balance between, you mentioned policing before, but let's say governance, not policing, between good governance and allowing them to do, you know, what they do best? Is there a balance?
Yes, I think there needs to, you need to have the structure for that.
Right.
So each of our divisions, and there are five divisions, so we have a division for the McDonald's business, one which is called 1923 Investments, which essentially are the investments which are related to Apple, to logistics, to IT, to technology that you mentioned. We have a property business, we have hospitality, and we have marine. Those are the five main areas. And, you know, they start from Premier Capital being the largest to the marine being the smallest. you know, some are new and some have been there for, for a long time. So
But you kind of prefer having, you know, CEOs and leaders in place or have a lot of autonomy, or is there a degree of structure to bring everything together then?
No, there is some structure that brings it together. But what I was going to say was that each of the divisions has its own board, its own chair, appointed by Ventures, but I'd like to think that they are the people that manage the business.
And take kind of decisions.
And take the decisions. And yes, there is an element where Hilo Ventures would get involved. But, you know, in the main, companies and people are left to their devices to run. You know, they present a plan, you know, and they run with
it. And they get and they run.
Great.
One thing I noticed, for example, is you have a number of non-executive directors on the various companies. You know, what's their role? You know, they're just providing insight and networks, I guess, and otherwise they just, you know, help the company.
Well, this is a terminology that's used. There are independent directors and non-executive directors. To me, if you're a board member, you will have the same same goal.
Whether
you're, you know. I'd like to think everybody's independently minded. We don't want anybody that doesn't provide his own to be sitting around that table. And they're there to, you know, to watch governance, to help with ideas of growing the business, and a good sounding board for the chief executive.
Exactly.
And these are people that would have, especially the ones that we like to call or independent directors, these have, you know, either run big businesses or are in some...
They come with their own track record.
They come with their own track record. So they bring insight to the business, which helps a person that's fully immersed in the same thing day in, day out.
Exactly. So it creates that balance.
Yes,
that
it's good to have somebody to sit around there and say, have you thought of this? And then you say...
From a detached position.
I think these are good people to have. And they move about. We don't appoint people and they're there for life.
Okay.
So some come for 3-4 years and then go. Some come for 2-3 years and then move on to another division.
Okay.
But yes, we have some... It's a good model we operate.
Absolutely. On the management front, because that's on a board level, on the management front, from your experience now for many years, what do you think is, what are the characteristics of a well-oiled machine in terms of team management and management on the ground?
I think leadership is key, and that is not something you win. It's not something you go into a room, you say, I'm the boss here.
Okay.
It doesn't work like that.
Okay. How do you know that someone has these characteristics?
You see it.
Okay.
You see it, and the people below that person see it. They look up to the man, the woman, whoever it is that's running their particular patch. I think that is key. The leadership element is... And, you know, leadership then comes with hard work, it comes with everything that a good business person can...
Yeah, and that a good team requires, absolutely.
Yes, and even the selection of the team, how you build a team.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really important.
Okay.
You know, does somebody want to do everything himself or herself?
Okay.
Or does one build a proper team so that person can then move on?
Okay.
Because you can never move on in life in
if you're stuck
up the ladder, if you're stuck to...
Controlling a little patch, essentially. Going back again all these years, would you think there were, you know, a couple of things, you know, I would say, you know, mistakes, you know, decisions that went, you know, the other way, you know, that you've learned from?
Yes, I think I don't know if I mentioned this before, we could have been quicker in doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
We went fast enough.
Okay.
I mean, I think we're quite a conservative company, although we can come across how we're involved in many countries.
That's how I saw it, at least.
But we're conservative in what we do. I don't think we're involved in... I mean, we're involved in business, so there's an element of risk in anything you do, but I don't think we're involved in risky businesses.
Okay.
So I think we could have progressed in some areas... More of an accelerated way.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that we've done a bad job of it.
Absolutely not.
You know, I think, and you know, my team's done an excellent job at moving and taking and taking the people with them is what we
exactly. Exactly. What would you say are, you know, two or three important skills for people coming out of university or, you know, business schools, you know, taking up these leadership positions in various organizations? What skills would they require in the future?
I think if they're all rounded as people, the key thing is the work ethic. I think, you know, if you work hard, you will somehow get there in some shape or form, you know, be it in business, whatever the subject is that's of interest, and doing something that you're happy doing.
Okay, that's key.
Never get up in the morning and not feel happy doing. And we've had people in situations like this that, you know, either through over promotion or maybe they don't feel comfortable doing the job, they're in a job, and then when you ask them to move, either to move out, because you do that as well sometimes, or to move in another role, they feel relieved.
Okay. Because they would be tired of doing.
Yes,
and they would require
something
a new challenge
that they're not happy doing. Mm-hmm.
But it's again a bit of a leadership, you know, skill to identify these kind of things happening with your team. No, it's not exactly textbook.
No. But it's also, you know, the people you engage should be able to come out with that themselves.
Yes.
You're not going to go and say, okay, but I, you know, I'd like to move on to something else, or I'd like to move on completely.
Exactly. And in a company which is diversified, that obviously is as an opportunity.
Yes, because the more things you have going on, the more opportunities you have.
I wanted to ask, just to kind of round up a little bit as well, you know, from your experience, a lot of people, you know, who use Trade Malta's services would be companies, owners and managers of companies, typically much smaller, looking for international growth. What would you tell them from your experience in terms of, you know, things to look out for or good habits to have in order to succeed internationally and to grow internationally?
I think being small is a big advantage.
Okay.
You know, and you must never give up at what you're doing. That, you know, the world is so big. It's so big out there. Don't take unnecessary risks, but risks do take, because, you know, nothing is going to fall in your lap. You have to go for it. You have to go and grab it. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's so much potential out there. Not because Malta's a bad place, but because Malta's small.
Yeah.
The market is 400,000 people in whichever way you want to put it. In other countries, you know, the populations are much, much bigger. So there's so much more. Yes, is there more competition? There probably is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the more of you there are, I think the more you can learn from people.
Exactly.
And you learn more, you know, with more competition around, I feel.
Okay.
Keeps you on your toes.
Has this been your experience?
Yes, keeps you very much on your toes, much more than it does if there's no competition at all.
Okay. Interesting. With that, I'd like to round up this conversation. Melo Healy, I'd like to thank you, first of all, on behalf of Trade Malta, HSBC, our strategic partners, and Studio 7, who are helping us with this series. And this has been really, really interesting. Thank you.
In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insights was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.